Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Rootscast. I'm Jeff Daverman, the creator of Root Concepts, owner of Infamous Network, and we are here discussing the ideas behind Root Concepts and how it applies to the lives of our fan base, the people that we work with, and the folks who love what we do and want to use our artwork to express themselves and succeed in their own artistic endeavors. Okay, hello there again, everybody. This is Jeff Daverman, your host of Rootscast, and we are coming to you from Never Better Studio, beautiful Prescott, Arizona, again this evening. And I am joined once again here by Uncle Doug, and he's still with us for a few more days. We had some real good darts this afternoon, didn't we, Doug? You're pretty hot.
I can't beat you more than you beat me, though. So,
well, it sure is good to have some solid competition around here, and it's been a lot of fun. And so has our conversations in the time that you've been here. Been really fantastic to have you expand on the ideas that you've been working on over the past really several years, and working with this new idea of empowerment psychology. And we've talked a little bit about the lecture series that you have on the Empowerment Psychology Facebook page. And we've talked a lot about those ideas around willpower and acceptance, emotional regulation and intensity, expectations, and the theme of begin within that kind of threads through the whole thing. And then towards the end of our last episode, we really touched on the idea a little bit more of empowerment itself. And so I'd like you to just kind of refresh us about, you know, around the idea of empowerment. I mean, your whole thing and the book that you're working on is actually, again, around empowerment psychology, so it's part of the basis of what you're doing. So why don't you just give us a little refresher on that, and then that is going to be the primary theme for this evening. So
that's right. This really represents part two, lecture two, and part two in the book that I'm working on, and it really does get at the heart of the matter. Obviously, part one, Begin Within, has to do with things that we can learn and ways that we can manage ourselves, all of which then become an internal reference point from which we function, sort of what I like to think of as living from the inside out. And being empowered or understanding what empowerment is the recognition that we have a potential within us. And I like to quote Abraham Maslow, because I think he says it very well. He refers to it as self-actualization. And he says, I think of a self-actualized person not as an ordinary person with something added, but rather as an ordinary person with nothing taken away. And so, just briefly, if we connect to the last lecture and we see the inhibiting influence of shame-based or fear-based or anxiety-based or anger-based.
Right. What you're referring to is the hierarchy of emotion that we discussed in a previous episode.
That's right. And while it's normal and natural to have all of those feelings when they live dormant in our subconscious and influence our daily life, because they add on to the experiences we're having.
Part of the filters that you referred to in our previous episode.
That's right. So part of what we can learn to do is to be able to become empowered by resolving and absolving ourselves of the baggage of the of the emotions that have come from the experiences of life, but are limiting in the way that we live it. So here's another thing Abraham Maslow says about self-actualization, which again, there's a few different terms: self-actualization, self-realization, self-reliance. These are all terms used by Carl Jung, with Ralph Waldo Emerson, and Maslow, and these are all similar concepts. They're basically the idea that we have within us a potential. So again, this is what Abraham Maslow says. Self-actualized people are those who have come to a high level of maturation, health, and self-fulfillment. They value the values that self-actualizers appreciate include truth, creativity, beauty, goodness, wholeness, aliveness, uniqueness, justice, simplicity, and self-sufficiency. So Maslow is really well known because part of his study was to look at people who he deemed to be self-actualized and then to glean and put together an idea of what these qualities look like. And I think there's a real similarity or the ideas behind empowerment are also connected to that kind of self-fulfillment. We could say that a person who is empowered discovers an inner peace, a way of being with themselves that, like the concept of the idea being that the external factors that are situations that are occurring in the world don't have a direct effect on the internal experience of a person. So it's a separating from.
Okay. So listen, I have just a quick clarification because you mentioned self-reliance, self-actualization. In a previous episode, we talked a lot about self-awareness. Would you add that into, or is that something different?
No, self-awareness is largely the method by which a person comes to be able to function internally or improve the ways in which they recognize how these emotions limit.
So self-realization comes through the practice of self-awareness.
Absolutely correct. That's right.
Okay. And then there's one other thing that I wanted to mention, because you mentioned Carl Jung. And one of my favorite quotes, I think, really ties to the idea of begin within and what you were just talking about, is from him, Carl Jung. And he says, your visions will become clear when you can look into your own heart. Who looks outside dreams, who looks inside awakes.
That's right. It's not difficult to find the wisdom of the ages when it comes to the advice that we need to turn inward and know ourselves. Ralph Waldo Emerson is another one who's written a treatise on self-reliance, and all of it has to do with being able to separate ourselves from the influences of the world around us, and in the form of solitude and having a relationship with ourselves, gain an understanding and an ability to operate from a deeper sense of what that means.
Well, and so here's another beautiful quote that goes a long ways back, and it's actually from Lao Tzu. Yeah. And Lao Tzu says, at the center of your being, you have the answer. You know who you are, and you know what you want.
Yes. That's right. It's a trusting in ourself in a way that opens up a set of possibilities.
Okay, so let's get back to empowerment. And so you were talking about self-actualizations and self-realization, and that is the essence of empowerment, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, other terms that are very applicable and probably recognizable when we're living in the world and see people around us is someone who is confident, who is comfortable with themselves, who is able to be assertive in a way that demonstrates they can stand up for themselves or stand up for what's right or wrong. You know, self-assured. I think we've all seen people that we at least assume have a certain level of confidence and are empowered in the way that they go about their life.
So I just wanted to move into this. You have this visual graphic here that you say you're going to be part of the book, and it really does illustrate a lot of some of the ideas and how they all relate to each other. And so we want to try and verbally illustrate this for our audience, because we had a discussion about it last night, and it was really great for you to be sharing these ideas, and I'm excited to have you share them with the audience here. And so what we have here, well, I'll let you just describe it initially here, and then we can try and put some color to it.
So one of the ways that I think it makes most sense is not only to talk about what it is, but also to talk about what it isn't. So contextualizing, being empowered, really has a lot to do with understanding what it means to either be disempowered or to be abusing power. So again, here's a theme. Power has a lot to do with how it is we come to function in the world. And when we're empowered, we want no more nor no less for ourselves than we want for someone else. So it's an egalitarian, a balanced way of approaching life. The essence of which is that it's our birthright, our value and our worth gives us the right to stake a claim to the person we are, and to live, as I said before, from the inside out in a way that's confident and that relates to other people in ways that are fair and considerate. The problem is, Jeff, that most people are not empowered or self-actualized or have a deeper sense of self-reliance.
And that's what this illustration that you have here really seeks to kind of clarify and define, not just that most people aren't empowered, but why and how to become empowered.
Right. So what we need to do is we need to talk about ways in which people are not empowered.
Okay.
So if we think about it as a spectrum, or I draw it when I'm demonstrating in front of people, I draw it as an arc.
An arc. Okay. So like a rainbow.
Like a rainbow, yep.
Okay.
So on one end of this spectrum would be selflessness. Okay. And then on the other end of the spectrum is selfishness. Okay. And the center point is what represents true self-love, or the place where a person can be empowered.
Okay, so now you're saying this is a spectrum. Right. So selflessness is on one side, selfishness is on the other side. Mm-hmm. On this arc, those are the extremes. And so we all fall somewhere on the spectrum, correct?
That's right. Yeah, we either fall, you know, in a certain place on the spectrum, or sometimes we swing from one side to the other.
Mm-hmm. So it's not all one way all the time.
That's
but
right.
Really, so let's just for visual illustration, let's say that selfishness is red and selflessness is blue. Mm-hmm. And so what we're really going for is to try and be in try and find the iridescent purple.
That's right.
We're all more or less some shade of purple, but what we're really going for is the precise mixture, so we find ourselves right in the middle of the spectrum. Is that where the ideal is?
Yeah, there's a range in the middle, okay? It's not a rigid point where we're empowered and we never stray from that. In fact, it takes flexibility, and a very important part of all of this is that it has to do with relation or relationships. Okay, being empowered isn't something we do on a desert island by ourselves. It's in a social context, and so the truth is, when we function along with other people, there's a healthy amount of give and take. There's a healthy amount that we are willing to move toward the direction of selflessness, and there's also a healthy amount that we're willing to say, it's my turn to receive. It's my turn to need other people and be supported by other people. And when we stay within that range and we coordinate and cooperate and navigate that with other people, that's a range within which we can maintain our empowerment.
So let's just go back to these extremes a minute, okay? Because that really is the bright red or the bright blue.
Right.
And what we're talking about is, you know, some variable of purple. Yeah. But can you just expand a little bit when you talk about selflessness? Like, what does that mean? And the same thing with selfishness. And again, with the understanding that people can have behavior, you know, lean towards red at one point or lean towards blue at another point. But just expand on that a little bit so then we can make our way around this illustration.
Yeah, that's very important. So let's start on the selfless side. And first of all, in the lecture series and in the question and answer part of it, you know, the question came up, well, I've always thought that selflessness was a good thing.
Well, and that was going to be part of what I was going to ask you, because in the Root Concepts sticker line, you know, we have a sticker, I made it, and it's has the phrase beautiful selflessness. And for myself, that, you know, kind of connotes altruism, let's say, or, you know, an understanding, a willingness to give, things like that. But when you have it all the way on the extreme, then I'm assuming you're referring to something that isn't necessarily a positive attribute.
Well, often it's founded on a sense of one's lacking self-worth or self-esteem. In other words, if I'm selfless because I don't believe I deserve what it is that other people deserve, or that my value is diminished.
So on the arc here, you have no me.
No me. Underneath
selflessness. Right. I mean, that's pretty blunt right there. No me, where you are just not even in your own equation.
That's right. And it's, you know, it's possible for someone to simply put everyone else's needs and desires first and find themselves never getting their needs met. Often it plays out by passivity or the lack of assertiveness
a lack of assertiveness,
mm-hmm,
is another real indicator.
Yes. Passivity comes out of the sense that I don't deserve. I'm not good enough. I don't expect to have what it is that really represents what I call our birthright, or the right for us to take our place in the world and to be ourselves in a way that is valued.
And so that impacts self-esteem.
That's right. What I'm basically saying is that the platform from which we either discover our self, our empowerment, is self-worth. And unfortunately, many people don't have a very strong sense of self-worth. And their behaviors reinforce what it is that then ultimately plays out in their life. They're more easily victimized. On one hand, they can be generous and giving and altruistic, but on the other hand, they can fool themselves into believing that that's how they gain their value. And often they have resentments or regrets, or they're angry about the fact that even though they're generous, they somehow believe there's a reward in that they're not actually giving to themselves. So I like to say that they're not fully accepting responsibility for their place in the world and the person that they are. They're expecting somehow for those needs to be met by external influences.
Okay, and so that's selfless, and how that impacts the self-esteem of somebody who comes from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And then selfishness, mm-hmm. Why don't you just summarize that? And I'll just say it says all me. So selfless says no me, and selfish here, all me.
Right. So, interestingly, a person who is focused on themselves without incorporating their place in the world and the mutuality that comes along with living life is somebody who is also diminished in their sense of their own value or worth. And instead of feeling weakened and disempowered by that, they're wanting to gain control or through aggressive means control the circumstances or the people around them. So whereas a person who is selfless tends to be passive, a person who is selfish tends to be aggressive.
Right.
Domineering, controlling, entitled. We've all recognized people that are usurping the lion's share of the power that might be distributed amongst people. And we often might mistake that for confidence or for a sense of being powerful. But in fact, it's a compensation. It's making up for the feelings of lack of worth or not being good enough in some way or another.
Well, and what I find really interesting, again, back to the illustration that you have here, is that even though the selfless and the selfish are on the opposite ends of your spectrum, they share low self-esteem.
That's right. And that's an important thing to understand, that whether we call it low self-esteem or low self-worth or a feeling of not being good enough or somehow an association that one's performance is the way in which a person is evaluated rather than one's essence, which is not related at all to what it is we do and perform in the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, yes, I'm looking at your illustration here, and I notice that as you climb up, let's say, from the extremes, and you make your way up the arc, you have a lot of words and phrases here. And so I'm wondering, is that where you want to go with it? Do you go up the arc in this illustration?
Well, it does suggest a set of gradations, and let's just say that when a person extends to the selfless side of things, it's not always because they're aware of their, you know, it's not because they have such a hugely diminished sense of their own worth. I think a common mistake that people make is that they do things to make other people happy, and then they resent it. You know, they extend, there's beliefs around this. They extend themselves beyond their actual boundaries and limits. And then they start producing emotions that are a reflection of a lack of their own boundaries. Now, if they do that enough times and as a repeated pattern, then it starts to slide downhill. Their sense of worth becomes diminished more and more. They don't dare to speak up or speak on their own behalf. A lot of times I look at the selfless side of things and ask myself, what is the deeper issue? And just as we talked last time about shame-based, often a person who is suffering from low self-esteem is somebody that has identified shame as being something that is associated with their own value. And it isn't an either or, it's a gradation of different things. Of course, the center of which is where we represent our more empowered self.
That's where empowerment is. It's okay. In the middle there. Mm-hmm. Now, what I find, again, interesting with this illustration that you have here is that you are referring to, and you referred to it a little bit earlier, give and take. There's a give and take in all of the relationships that, you know, bring you more to the middle, to the purple, let's say, the iridescent purple that we're all going for. And that also is directly connected with boundaries and limitations. So I'm wondering if you could speak about that a little bit.
Well, to be in a relationship with people, we have to constantly navigate and negotiate our differences. And whenever we make decisions together, we have to come to some mutual agreement. So if, for example, you say, hey, let's go watch this movie, and I don't want to watch that movie, then we have to figure out, well, how are we going to navigate that? You go on your own, or I suggest a different movie, and somewhere in there, there's got to be some degree of compromise. And so flexibility is an important thing. And in a given situation, we might concede to the other person's wishes. But if that's the pattern that we're always doing that, then we probably need to ask ourselves, well, what's going on there? Either that person is more domineering and I'm choosing to be more passive, or because what's sustainable in a relationship is when the give and the take is approximately the same over time. It doesn't need to be tit for tat. Okay, I went to your movie, now you go to my movie. But it does need to feel like in a relationship things are balanced. And it's up to us to be able to recognize how to navigate that and how to negotiate that, how to say, well, here's my limit. This is what I can do and can't do. And part of the reason, part of the way that we recognize it's a boundary is when we're starting to feel resentment.
Be triggered, right.
That's right.
Yeah. And so so communication skills are a part of that, right? And having an understanding of willingness, I suppose. I have studied the teachings of Marshall Rosenberg and nonviolent communication, and he talks about the contributing to the well-being of others and how that actually feels good. And so to have a deeper understanding of how to negotiate relationships, and I suppose all of that you can relate back to emotional regulation. And when you're feeling empowered, you really are in the middle, right? You're calm, you're in the middle, you recognize kind of what you said before, that you don't want any more or less for yourself than you do for somebody else. And of course, this is never more important than it is in your day-to-day, essentially most intimate relationships, right? Your family,
right.
Your friends, your community, your coworkers, the people who you are around day in and day out, where you spend enough, you have enough shared experiences, you're going to trigger each other. You're going to have to negotiate. You are going to have to deal with each other's selflessness and selfishness and, you know, where you are on that spectrum on any given day. So it is a very fluid thing that we're talking about here in the emotional realm. And recognizing, begin within, recognizing what you can control is a way to make your way through life and with as little of these hierarchy filters, you know, where essentially you are able to live to your highest potential, I suppose, right?
That's right. Now, being able to represent ourselves, okay, that means know what it is that we're thinking and feeling in a way that then can be communicated. And knowing what it is that's generating emotions that are telling us where our boundaries are or telling us what it is that allows us to flex in one way or another. The other thing about empowerment is it's meant to empower others. Where being disempowered, we don't have the capacity to empower others or being powerful. Powerful is meant to dominate others. Empowering is not coming from a place of scarcity. It's coming from a place of clarity. Okay, what am I feeling? What are my limits? What am I? And so negotiating and navigating the dynamics of relationships is much more effective. You know, going back to emotional regulation, what I call the intensity, the triangle of intensity, where, you know, we put it on a scale of 1 to 10. When we're feeling a certain feeling at a level 5 to 10, usually that's already then become part of something that's meant to dominate other things. It even dominates our own thinking. So when we learn how to regulate our emotions and keep a broader perspective about what it is we're doing, it helps us to be more receptive to what another person might be feeling or their perspective on, you know, what's going on. And so, you know, I mean, in many ways, it's really common sense. The calmer we are, the more likely we're going to be able to communicate our way through any particular conflict or problem. And an empowered person, that's part of what they do. They're self-regulated in a way so that the relationships they have are worked through. So,
okay, that's fantastic. And you know what? We're going to take a little break here, and on the other side of the break, we are going to continue with the theme of empowerment, and we're going to relate it. You just kind of started right there, and we're going to continue to relate it to how we can become empowered in the emotional realm where we, you know, are able to have relationships with the people around us and empower them as well through our own empowerment, right? Through our own behavior, through our own decision making. Okay, so hang on for just a moment. Let's take a quick break, and we'll see you on the flip side.
Every man thinks his burden the heaviest, but it's common they know, because they feel, and who feels it knows it all. Who feels it knows it all.
Okay, we are back for the second part of the show here, RootsCast, with Jeff Daverman, your host, and Douglas Halberda, Uncle Doug. And you just heard Who Feels It Knows It, Bunny Wailer. A little bit of reggae on the show today. Always got to love that. Who Feels It Knows It, Doug? On the other side of the break, we were talking about our feelings, our emotions, and how we relate to those and how we relate to other people in our relationships.
That's right. Yes. Maybe one of the biggest things we can do when we're communicating with other people is to let them know what it is we're feeling. And of course, if we don't know what that is, if we're less conscious of the experience of what we're feeling, so that we can't actually tell someone I'm irritated or I'm bothered or I'm feeling anxious or worried, then those things are going to come out not through self disclosure or self revelation, but through the behavior or the harshness of our words or those kinds of things. So yes, it's all tied together. The degree to which we understand ourselves and are able to communicate and represent ourselves is the degree to which we then improve the likeliness that real communication is going to occur, where we can empathize with each other and understand each other to the degree that we can. In psychology, there's a concept which is termed I statements. So I statements are really a reflection of what it is that's true for me. And when we're communicating with people, then we can make I statements. That's giving them information. And if they're making I statements, we're getting information from them. And it's in that exchange of information that we can discover our mutuality, discover the ways in which we connect and understand each other. And even if we've discover that there's differences or conflicts, we can realize that, well, what we can do about that is really speak from our own truth.
Okay, so you know, when you say that reminds me again of some of the work I've done with nonviolent communication and Marshall Rosenberg, the principles of nonviolent communication. He breaks the communication into four parts: observations, feelings, needs, and requests. And the observations are quite often I statements, and particularly I notice, right? Where you're in observation and you're trying to observe without judgment and essentially just state what your observation is, like you were a camera in the room. And so I certainly found that to be helpful in my own relationships, in creating harmony and creating a deeper understanding and being able to empathize with people who are also practicing that as well. We have, over the past few days, we've had conversations where we're talking about an individual's relationships, how and who and what we actually are having to be aware of relating to in this lifetime. And so I came across this Marshall Rosenberg quote earlier today. It just happened to be something I shared on Facebook 3 years ago. It was in my memories, and it just happened to pop up today, and it really reminded me of some recent conversations that we've been having, and then I'll read it, and I'm wondering if then you can maybe give me your perspective on it. So Marshall Rosenberg is talking about creating peace, and he says, I would like us to create peace at three levels and have each of us know how to do it. So he says, first, within ourselves, similar to the begin within theme that we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. He goes on to say, that is to know how we can be peaceful with ourselves when we're less than perfect, for example. How we can learn from our limitations without blaming and punishing ourselves. If we can't do that, I'm not too optimistic how we're going to relate peacefully out in the world. Very similar to the things that you have been talking about. And then he goes on here, he says, second, between people. Again, something we've been talking about just a few minutes ago. He says, nonviolent communication training shows people how to create peace within themselves and at the same time how to create connections with other people that allows us compassionate giving, allows compassionate giving to take place naturally. And I love that phrase, compassionate giving. And that's a pretty consistent theme throughout nonviolent communication. And then he wraps it up saying, third, in our social systems, to look out at the structures that we've created, the governmental structures and the other structures, and to look at whether they support peaceful connections between us, and if not, to transform those structures. So we've mostly touched on the first two, so that's really what I would like you to address. And then also, you know, if you could relate that to back to self-esteem a little bit as well.
Well, I completely agree and value what it is that Marshall Rosenberg is talking about. I think it's being empowered. It has a lot to do with understanding what our inner life is. And by knowing that and being comfortable with that, then how it is that we represent ourselves to each other. And I agree with him that if we, that's where it begins. That's what we have to do. We have to put ourselves first in the sense of it being our responsibility to know and to regulate and to understand ourselves and to gain the skills that are effective in communicating with others. One of the big obstacles is that there's so many things that are part of the experience of living that diminish our likeliness of doing that. And whether we call it self-esteem or self-worth or messages and inner dialogue that goes on within most of us that depletes our value and our worth or tells us that we're not good enough in some way or another. There's a whole lot of us who are caught up in the subtext of those emotions that keep us from living life fully. We talked about them in one of the earlier sessions, you know, shame and guilt and apathy and fear and anxiety and sadness and anger. All of those are emotions that are relevant to life and we will experience at different times in life. And if we regulate them, we'll experience them in ways in which we're taking each situation that occurs one at a time and we're dealing with that situation in an appropriate way that resolves it directly. But most of us, particularly in our childhood, got messages about ourselves that diminished that sense of our own worth or value. And maybe we don't even realize it, that there's a negative critic in our head. There's someone who's constantly telling us we're not good enough or we don't deserve it or it's never going to work out or, has fears and anxieties about who we are in the world. And what I would really want to focus on, and this will probably come in the next session that we have together, is what are the external influences that generate the negative self-talk that is so common.
The sources of a lot of the insecurities that people tend to grow up into adulthood learning?
That's right. There's, and I won't go too much into it now, but childhood is an incredibly important time because we are vulnerable and dependent upon adults in our world to shape us and our perceptions of ourself. And So we have primary influences like our parents and our family, but we also have social systems like schools and teams, and where there's a lot of information that comes back to us about our own worth or our own value. And I would say, unfortunately, particularly in Western society, there's an association between our value and our performance, or our value and our image. And these are two dominant influences that are actually false, that our value is not associated to how well we perform at something. It's something much deeper and much more divine, in a sense, that just being a human being is what it is that gives us our value. And of course, we don't have any trouble thinking about that when we see an infant, 6 month or a 1 year old baby. We don't say, well, their value is how hard they cry, or we see their value and we hold it in high regard, despite the fact that they can't do anything in the way of performing.
It's just intrinsic.
It's intrinsic.
They are a part of the human race, and so that's their contribution, and it has intrinsic value. It's the birthright.
That's the birthright. And I would go so far as to say that we contain within us all of what is humanly possible, and in even a divine sense. In other words, that we are inherently divine, and it's a matter of discovering what that means by holding the truth of what that is.
Don't be getting too religious on me now. When you say the divine, mm-hmm. just define that a little bit.
Well, that's part four of the whole thing. But you know, not
okay. We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit.
Yeah, but that's okay because we're going to go there. But it speaks to the mystery that's involved in what it means to be human. None of us is whole or complete as we know ourselves, and that means there's a connection to that which is beyond ourselves. And so that potential that we have, while it manifests itself in the way we live life, it seems to be something that connects us to something greater than we are. We're not separate from the larger truth. We're part of it.
And so the filters in the emotional hierarchy, essentially they are the filters that create the illusion of separateness from what it is you speak of.
That's right. They diminish our sense of our own value and our sense of our own worth. They frustrate us in the sense that we don't live from a place that expects our highest potential to manifest. And I say that both personally or individually and collectively. We can't collectively evolve or develop and grow into what's possible if we're inhibited by all these restraints. The biggest restraint being the sense of our own lack of worth or value.
And so true empowerment is then getting in touch with that divine aspect of who we are. And so that's where the begin within comes back into play, huh?
Well, and myself, very much in line with Ralph Waldo Emerson, sees that as being an internal process, not an external one. So the reason I don't bring religion into this is because it's not a pursuit of something that's external, a god or a deity that's outside of ourselves. Rather, it's the process of transcending and discovering that by accessing that as an experience from within. So going back to Maslow's quotation about what a self-actualized or an empowered person is, it's someone who's fulfilling the notion of self in a way that's not separating themselves from the world. It's participating, it's creative, it's engaged, it's dedicated to values and ideals.
I'm pretty sure Bob Marley put it by saying, you know and will understand, a mighty God's a living man, right? And one of the most empowering songs that he has, Get Up, Stand Up. Stand up for your rights.
That's right.
And yeah, I'm pretty sure he put that in there on purpose.
That's right. That's what it means to be assertive, that we all have a place and we can stake a claim to it, get up and stand up and be ourself and represent who that person is and go beyond that to be part of the creation, part of what it is that develops humanity and the possibilities that exist. I mean, it's pretty easy to look back historically and see that culture and art and all the things that have sort of come out of humanity have come out of individuals who've done that. And it's not in isolation, but it's fulfilling the part of themselves that says, yes, I'm here. I have something to say. I have something to do in this world.
Well, and ultimately that is who we look to. We look to the people who have been in touch with that to a degree where they can actually manifest it through their own creativity, their own imagination, their own lived experience expression, let's say, right?
That's right. So Jeff, rather than to go too much further now, I think let's look forward to two more of these podcasts, and the next one will be a reflection on some of the ideas about what we're up against. And I think it's particularly relevant in the times we're in.
It is, and I'm not going to let you off that easy. Mm-hmm. So what we're up against, give us a little preview.
Well, I break it into four parts. The first part is the levels of inadequacy that's involved in our child rearing. In other words, there's a set of ideals about how it is that we might be raised because we are dependent and vulnerable, and how we are raised has a lot to do with how we feel about ourselves. So, but very few of us have a perfect childhood.
None, I would dare say.
None of us do. So one of the things I want to do is look at the influence of how it is that we're raised, not only by our primary caregivers, but by the general environment, and what are the influences that affect us.
Good.
So another part has to do with a large-scale understanding of how we fit into society at large. Carl Jung called it massification. So there's large influences that tend to group people into categories of units that serves to create a society, but at the expense of the individual. So,
okay.
Ralph Waldo Emerson referred to it as the negative influence of conformity, and how it is that particularly when we're disempowered,
right,
we find ourselves trying to gain validation and proof by fitting in, and mm-hmm. When we try to fit in, what we do is we develop status systems and we develop images of ourselves rather than turn inward. So in all these cases, it's what it is that makes it more difficult to live a life where we're making peace and gaining understanding of ourself. The fourth one has to do with the contemporary society, and what I talk about is the rate of change. The truth is we're so stimulated by external influences that it tends to create a kind of a neglect for our inner life and the kind of self-knowledge that comes from separating ourselves from the world around us. solitude and those things that allow us to deepen our self-knowledge and our self-awareness get trumped by the stimulus that exists in the world around us. And anyway, those are the four things I'm going to talk about, and we can go into more depth on all of them.
Fantastic. All right, well, thanks for doing that, for dropping that, because that is definitely some really good things to look forward to. And so just to clarify, right, and to a lot of empowerment comes from understanding the things that can inhibit us from being empowered.
Right.
And so essentially that's going to be the theme of the next episode then.
That's right. So today we looked at how it is that our individual lack of worth can inhibit our ability to be empowered. Now we're going to expand it to the influences of things outside of us that may have influenced how it is we feel about ourselves, but that are also large forces that we have to know about in order to be able to avoid.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Doug. I really appreciate you sharing all of your wisdom with us this evening, and I'm looking forward to getting together again here real soon, and we'll go through a little more detail what you're talking about there. And thanks, everybody, for joining us for another episode of RootsCast. Again, I am with Uncle Doug, Douglas Halwerda, Empowerment Psychology, and we're going to pick it up next time, so we'll see you then. Thank you.
All right, good night.
Thank you so much for listening and being a part of what we're doing here at Root Concepts. If you were inspired by what you heard, click the link in the show notes and enter your information so we can send you more great messages like the one you just heard.
Until next time, this is Jeff Daverman signing off. Thank you for listening. Peace.